So the title of the talk this afternoon is Independence and Interconnectedness. Independence and Interconnectedness. And this is a very alive exploration for me at this particular stage of my journey. And so recently, a memory kind of surfaced when I was in South India on the beach, kind of wearing for the first time in my life, I think, not for the first time, but for the first time in a long time, wearing very non-Indian clothes on the beach. So a skirt just to the knees and no sleeves. If you're a woman traveling in India for a long time, you may appreciate the joy of that. And it really reminded me of a period in my life where I was wearing that kind of outfit quite a lot. And it was a period in my mid-20s when I had just broken up with a boyfriend after a 3-year relationship living together. And for the first time in my life, I was really exploring independence. I was really exploring who I am and what I like, what I enjoy. And so for the first time in my life, I was going shopping and buying feminine clothes and very colorful clothes. Something that I had never allowed myself before or had never perceived myself as enjoying before. And I was going out dancing and I was trying out wearing heels. I was doing a lot of things that I hadn't done before. And so this memory came with a kind of a memory with a feeling memory, not a mental memory, of the kind of joy and lightness of just this exploration and the widening of possibilities. And that real sense of, in the exploration, finding out, first of all, being interested, kind of asking, who am I really? And then finding out through doing a lot of different things. And so from the pain and the change of a relationship ending, a very joyful, light kind of exploration came. And it really felt like I was finding my own voice, my own way of being in the world. Finding my own independence. And so I'm not sharing this as kind of an advertisement for shirts, short skirts or shopping trips. But it feels to me like there's a link there. There's something that I can learn and I can share. In that process of interest, of exploration, of joyfulness, of adventure, of the question of who am I really? What matters to me, what interests me? From my own experience, not from my ideas. So not staying limited in the fact that my group of friends in high school only wore black, blue, gray, and white. And if we're feeling very daring, dark green or purple. But really allowing myself to explore the full range of possible colors. And to wear bright yellow. Or whatever it was. And it feels that in our inner journey, on our Dharma adventure, there's a very similar exploration of finding our own independence and our own maturity, which on an experiential level really feels like getting comfortable in my own skin, getting comfortable with who I am as I am, and being open to all the different aspects that make me up. So having that same sense of exploration and experimentation, like going shopping and trying on different dresses, trying out different ways of being, trying out different aspects of who I am. Embracing more of life. And being willing to question my perceptions, my ideas, what I think of as my limitations, my boundaries. And in that, there's a process of maturing, of growing up. And I'd like to just share two examples of that, a small example and a big example. So the small example is also from my recent time on the beach. As you can see, it's made quite an imprint. And so one day, we were swimming in the sea, and it was quite a rough sea, and there was also wind, so we got quite cold. And we had this kind of habit of having a swim and then going for a walk along the beach to kind of warm up. And as we were walking out of the sea, Nathan said to me, "Do you feel like jogging? Do you want to have a run?" And I haven't had a run since I was probably about 7 years old. And in that moment, I could kind of see that years of feeling uncomfortable in my body, in movement. Decades of that. Feeling uncomfortable in my body, in movement. And in that moment of seeing that, something just dropped away. And I said, "Yeah, let's have a run." And so running in my swimsuit on a beach in India, that's pretty exposed. And it was so much fun. And just this sense of lightness, in that dropping away of something that was there for so long. Not a big deal, but a big relief. A big relief. I'm not that not. I'm not that not runner anymore. And another example of this process is from a friend of mine who's in recent months been dealing with a very painful breakup, as well as a crisis in her trust for her teacher, both happening at the same time. It's a very painful process. And she wrote to me recently just saying how much she feels through this pain and through this letting go of everything that was invested in these two relationships and coming back into her own. She uses the phrase taking back her power, bringing it back to her. The sense in her words of, I'm finally growing up. And it's painful, and it's beautiful. I'm finally growing up. So this process has a lot of joy and lightness. And equally, it can be painful and challenging. Because as we open up our possibilities, we see the places where we're stuck, where we're limited or limiting ourselves. And we're asking ourselves the big questions. Who am I? What do I trust? What matters to me? Where do I put my power? We're asking ourselves these questions, which have a quality of shaking up our world, shaking up our life. And what I've noticed a lot in myself is when I start looking in this way, I also see how much of the time I'm living my life through the ideas or the perceived expectations of others. I'm giving the power out. So I'm prioritizing what I think someone else thinks is important. Not listening in here. And I evaluate myself through the eyes of others, or through what I think the eyes of others see, or the voices of others say. And this can be specific individuals, or this can be the norms, the views of the society that we live in. The same kind of process. And when I was reflecting on this today, I remembered how as a child, I wanted to be like my parents. I wanted to have glasses. And sometimes I used to put their glasses on. And if you've ever done that, that's exactly what we're talking about. Living our life with glasses that are for someone else's eyes. It's not very pleasant. I used to do it a lot, unfortunately. So turning our attention to this process, to seeing what we're doing, how we're doing it, challenging, painful, fruitful, joyful, all of this, the whole package. Just looking and listening what is happening inside as our first step. And really seeing how we're constantly influenced by others, which also means that we're influencing, which is sometimes less clear to us, but isn't less important. the constant movement. And seeing how this creates a lack of confidence in us, a lack of a positive kind of independence, of being comfortable in my own skin. Not an independence that doesn't need anyone else, but an independence that sees what is happening and takes back our seat in life. I also recently had this sudden kind of question in my mind, which comes from observing birds. I like watching birds. And it was about the fact that there's such a diversity in the way that birds live, and particularly in the courtship rituals of birds. And I was just thinking, how come nature didn't just figure out one way where a he bird finds a she bird and then just stop there and just copy that? And instead, there's this real richness and diversity. There's birds who find their mate through song or call or voice. There's some that dance. There's some that exhibit, so they look, you know, they have big feathers or colorful feathers. There's some who make a nest. There's some who decorate their nest. I've watched a lot of David Attenborough programs, so I know. So there's all these different ways, and I was really asking myself, why didn't nature stop? You know, obviously, the point is, he bird, she bird meet. They create the next generation. That's all that needs to happen. They found one good way. Why keep going? Why keep experimenting? Why create more beauty? And it feels to me that I don't know. But my sense is that that beauty has value and that diversity has value. That way of doing the same thing in so many ways. In the way that each of us here in the hall expresses love in a unique way. Expresses sadness in a unique way. Knows what matters to this heart, which can be different to another. And in this constant movement of creativity, there's still a sense of wholeness. So the different species of birds with their different methods are still part of one whole. So exploring my own maturity, authenticity, and how it's rooted in what we share, and yet nourished and nourishing my own voice, my own or our own individual expression. And I was speaking to someone yesterday about how this process happens in our own practice. This kind of embodiment of connection in my own practice, in our own practice, which is primarily rooted in the way I hold myself, in the way I relate to my own experience. And this other person was speaking about their practice as a constant accepting and allowing of how they are in each moment, in each situation. And how, as we do that, as again and again, I just am with the way I am, in that full embodiment of myself as I am, there's an expansion or a widening which holds all of life, which goes beyond this body, heart, mind. Or another way of saying that is that this body, heart, mind is everything. Not in a self-centered way, but in a self-expansive way. When I allow everything in here, I connect to everything everywhere. And this is particularly potent, it has the most power in the meetings with what we perceive as a limitation or an edge or a place of difficulty. And also yesterday, a lot of things happened yesterday, it seems. I was talking to two friends who had been in Anandawan, the leprosy community that we have a work retreat in every year. And one of them said to me, you know, I've got a problem that I need to share with you. I've developed this really strong kind of pull whenever I see an old Indian woman. I want to kind of get some oil and start rubbing her up and do her hair. The people that are laughing know what I'm talking about. And maybe kind of give her a squeeze. And myself and the other friend said, yeah, we have the same thing exactly. And sometimes we really have to hold ourselves back. And then we got talking about how interesting it is that exactly this kind of thing of massaging an old person with leprosy or doing hair that maybe hasn't been washed for some weeks or months, how much that was a meeting of an edge and how difficult it was and is. It's not that that's gone. And we actually got into this conversation of the things that are the most difficult or what I still won't do or whatever. I won't go into too much detail. But what really stayed with me from that conversation was how that meeting with the edge, their willingness to go into an old people's home in a leprosy community and meet my aversion, meet my imperfection, meet what's difficult for me, meet where my view of myself doesn't match reality, or my intention to be kind and caring is still not there with what is really possible for me right now. And that, doing that, day by day for 3 weeks, with intention, with care for ourselves, with patience, with taking the time, with support of friends, can shift things in a way that which was the challenge is now this uncontrollable, almost incontrollable, controllable still, almost incontrollable pull to give love to someone just because they're old and Indian. So that shift, and how every time I see an old Indian woman and I feel that pull, I'm connected to that capacity in me to care and to that love that we exchanged. Does that make sense? So? Yeah, it's really an important point. It's kind of the heart of this, and it's been eluding me in the articulation. So there's really something that happens, both in the interaction with myself and in the interaction with myself and with another. There's never an interaction just with another. It's always also with me. In that willingness to meet the darker, tighter places where things can shift and change and transform, not in a way that erases something, but in a way that includes it and then also includes more. It's like a gentle widening. Again, more possibilities, more colors we can wear, more ways we can be. And I see that I wrote this down here. Something that is really key in this is that the first step is to acknowledge, to see the edge, to accept that it's there. That's also in the work of acceptance with ourselves, the honesty to see. This is where my heart closes, or this is where I'm overwhelmed. That's the first step, to really see that edge. And then to accept it, and that gently allows the widening to happen. And the important thing about this is that it doesn't work just in the specific situation. It's not just that time or that specific edge. It kind of widens us and increases our flexibility, increases our inner diversity. So I want to give another example of this. And this is, we'll see how successful I am with sharing this story. It's a big one for me. So in October, at the end of the previous year, I was harvesting olives with some Palestinian friends in a village where I have an ongoing relationship with, where we do the Sangha Seva retreats regularly. And a friend came running to the orchard where we were working, and he was breathless and kind of, I said to him, just wait, and he said, I need your help. And I said, sure. And he was looking for the farmer that we were working with, so that he said, I need him to translate. And I turned to, this is a friend that we've been working with for many years, and I said to him, no, you don't need, you know, it's fine, I can understand you, just take a breath, go slow, just tell me what's going on. And so he told me he just got a phone call from his sister, and that his 9-year-old niece had a diagnosis of a very aggressive cancer and had been referred to treatment in Israel. And they were finding it impossible to make an appointment in the hospital so that she could receive treatment. And could I help, please? And there was such a sense of urgency because the cancer was spreading to the lungs, and the Jordanian hospital where she had gotten diagnosed was saying every day is crucial. Treatment needs to happen quickly as possible. So I spoke to his sister on the phone and got the details. And it was a Saturday, which is a day off in Israel, followed by 2 holidays straight after. So there was nothing we could do for 3 days. And I'm really having to be careful here not to go into too many details, because otherwise we'll be here for several hours. But the gist of it was that then got the appointment, got the permit for the mother and the child to go to the hospital. And so these are Palestinians. They need a special permit from the Israeli authorities to go into Israel for whatever reason. Got the permit for the mother and the child. The father was refused permission because he'd been in an Israeli prison 20 years before. So the mother and child could go, the father couldn't go. So got the appointment, got the first permit, and now we're working on the second permit, getting a permit for the father. I think we can all imagine that a 9-year-old daughter needs both her, 9-year-old child needs both her parents if she's going through surgery and chemotherapy. And so 2 more weeks passed of phone calls and paperwork and contact with different individuals and organizations that were helping. And 2 weeks later, I was again in an olive orchard, same village, different family, harvesting olives. And my phone rang. And it was Maouf, the father of Maïs, this little girl. And we knew 2 days before we got the message from our contact that the permit had been given, and he had gone to get it from the Palestinian office, and they said, no, it'll be 2 more days. So our contact said, go to the Israeli office, to the army office, and get it from them. And he was so scared to go. And so we had to really support him and talk to him and help him find the courage. I, as an Israeli, cannot go to his village to see him. And so I got a phone call from him saying, I have the permit, it's in my hand. And that moment, something really happened in me. I felt like I was being blown open. By the relief, but also by the sense, the deep, deep sense of the suffering that we can cause as human beings to each other. But in that being blown open, and in that feeling the depth of the suffering, there was no blame. This is where I really kind of need to be clear. I felt that I was everything and everyone in that story. I was the child, I was the parents. I was whoever it is, whatever army official it was, that feels that they have the right to separate a child from her father in this kind of situation. I was that person too. I could feel the whole picture. And of course, I was crying. Feeling that pain, feeling that responsibility, and feeling that empowerment. Feeling that empowerment. That we as human beings make these choices for each other. That we as human beings make these choices for each other. And that we as human beings have the power to heal. Have the power to transform, have the power to change. And to be blown open in a way where nothing is different or separate from who we are. And I could feel in that situation of just Fern in the middle of Olive Grove and my heart connected with the heart of this man who I'd never met and with the heart of those that were seemingly causing, that were part of causing his suffering. With the deep, deep knowledge that if this is part of who I am, then I have the ability to change it. If this is part of who I am, then I have the ability to change it. And I could feel in that, in those moments, and this experience stayed with me for a long time. I could also feel everyone else who had been part of this story, just there. And I was writing down today the things to remember to say about this, because it's so powerful, it kind of throws me off. So one thing that I wanted to remember was that in that moment of receiving this I don't even know what to call it, situation happening of someone saying, can you help? There was a clear yes. I don't know if I can change anything, but I'm willing to get involved. A clear yes. I'll do what I can. And in the doing, I met a Sangha. I spent a whole morning making phone calls to the hospital. And I didn't even know which department I needed to be speaking to. But every person I spoke to, whether it was a nurse, a receptionist, an administrator, whoever it was, no one turned me away. No one put the phone down. No one said, sorry, I can't help. Each person said, try this, and gave me the next step. Very immediately, and so that quality of responsiveness and shared responsibility. Was there. Of just, I'm phoning you because I need to make an appointment for a Palestinian child, and I have no idea who I need to speak to, and everyone is telling me it's not possible. Can you help? Yes. I can't make the appointment, but phone this person. And meeting people whose whole life is dedicated to relief of suffering. There's one man that I met through this process who lost his son in one of the recent wars in Israel. Not so recent, and has dedicated about 10 years since that to helping Palestinians, and particularly Palestinian children, receive medical treatment. And he went and sat outside a doctor's office for 4 hours that day to try and get an appointment. So that kind of sangha. And I feel like what can easily happen to us when we hear this kind of story is that we immediately feel, well, I'm not good enough. I couldn't do that. I wouldn't act in that way. And that's the last kind of message I would like to give here. This is who we are. With the capacity to cause suffering, to cause harm, we have the incredible capacity to bring healing and change. And it feels the word that was coming to me was that this isn't only our potential, it's our birthright to be that way. The Dalai Lama or Mother Teresa are not external to us. They are in us. This is who we are. So if you're feeling inadequate or not good enough right now, please take a breath and reconsider. We are good enough. We can change. that is in us. By being who we are, fully. By being who we are, fully. By resting in our own skin. By taking our place. Taking our seat in the family of all things. We can. And we will. So let's just have a quiet minute or two to end. I'd like to end with just a moment of loving kindness for Mais, who is being operated on any day now. For her family. For the Israeli Sangha who's adopted Mais and her family. And for all children everywhere who are sick, in pain. In distress. May all beings everywhere be safe, be healthy. Be cared for. May we all live fully and embody our potential and our birthright for healing and care. Thank you for your presence.